He was just a man,
but to me he was special. He was my father. She was just a woman, but to me she was special. She was my mother. In all of my life, I don't think I've ever been ashamed of my mom and dad. In fact, I think I have the greatest dad and I have the greatest mom in all the world. And I'm sure you think the same thing in your life. Do you know why? My mom and dad did what mom and dads are supposed to do. They taught me God's word. They disciplined me when I needed it. They encouraged me when I needed it. They did the things that mom and dads are supposed to do. One of the things my dad is good at, they're called sermonettes. So I'm going to be doing a series on the book of Proverbs. And as I do that, I'm going to use the little sermonettes that my dad gave us, like pigs won't eat it, or apples don't fall far from the tree, or other little proverbs that he had, and use them as the basis for the message that we're going to be studying. Today, we're going to be studying who likes a wise guy. Well, who does like a wise guy? Now, you might think that's a negative statement because most of you would say, if I said to you, who likes a wise guy, most of you would say, not me. To you and me, a wise guy is somebody who thinks he knows it all but really doesn't. But what if we took the phrase wise guy and not use it in the sense of a derogatory statement about somebody who thinks he knows all the answers and in reality doesn't? What if you could come up to somebody who really did know all the answers to life? How many think you would like to walk around with somebody who was really a wise person? I suspect all of us would say, everybody likes a true wise guy. Well, today we're going to be thinking about Solomon and the wisdom that he has for us in the book of Proverbs. And as we do that, I'd like you to turn your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 1 and the first 7 verses as we get our introduction to it. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. When you read that section, you recognize that he's trying to introduce you to this great, great book. If you've ever read through it, if you ever tried to preach through it, it's just about impossible to preach through it verse by verse because it just totally confuses you in that sense. But as you read it and as you memorize it, you recognize it has all these great statements that help you and me to become truly wise people. As we are introduced to this and we think about the question, who likes a wise guy, there's some issues that we want to deal with. First of all, we want to deal with the issue of what is the form in which this is given to us. And it's stated for us in the first words here of Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1. It's called the Proverbs. We understand that, but we're dealing with proverbs, not precepts, not promises, not things that are found in other sections of Scripture. What is a proverb? Well, you would find, as you study through the ancient Near Eastern literature, that proverbs were very, very common in those days. They're very common in our days, even now. We all like little statements like penny wise and pound foolish, stitch in time saves nine. We like little statements of truth that we can hang our hat on. They were especially popular in the days of the ancient Near Eastern people. They were called the wise men. In the Chinese culture, we think of Confucius, say. He was a wise man. He was a sage. He was a man who was able to summarize life in some way that you could understand it and use it in your life. So the concept of a proverb is it is a statement of a wise man. It's a very common statement that would flow through a culture and be memorized. And generally, they were not only common, they were also concise. And in general, a proverb was a short statement. It was a pithy statement. It was somehow a catchy little statement. It was something that you could understand. It was something that you could quickly memorize. It was something that was catchy enough that you understood what it meant. For example, we have one that goes like this. It takes one to know one. Sometimes when people were accusing you of something, you just say, it takes one to know one, and you walk away. You got them. It's easy for remembering. And so they were common, and they were generally concise, although in the book of Proverbs, some of them tend to get a little bit long, and that's okay. The Hebrew mind does not think of shortness as a volume. It thinks of shortness as a thought, and then so they might have many words in it, but it would still be concise. The key, however, to a proverb is that the word itself means a mirror, and so it is a reflective thought. It is by looking into this that I see something of myself. In some ways, it's a comparative statement. In some ways, it's a contrastive statement. It's like a mirror. By looking into it, I can reflect upon it. By looking into it, I can see something of myself in it. As you go through the Proverbs, you would recognize that often it is comparing or contrasting. It is showing you two ways of life, where the good and the bad, the right and the wrong. It is somehow contrastive or comparative in saying something that is true in this statement. I can say it again in this statement, and we can mirror it, we can reflect it, we can go back and forth, we can ponder it. So in many ways it is a contrastive. And finally, you recognize that a proverb, which is common and concise and comparative, is also a statement of choice. Although it is not a promise, and although it is not a precept that you hang your hats on as far as an instruction for your life, it is a statement. It is designed to show you by contrast and comparison and reflection and pondering, as you walk through life, you now have to make a choice. You have to be the wise man or the fool. You either have to be the person who listens to advice or the person who chooses not to listen to the advice. You can be the person who, in the multitude of counselors, finds wisdom, or you can be the person who says, I don't need any counselors, I'm going to make all the choices on my own. And as you go through the Proverbs, although they are quick, concise, clever little statements, when you're all done, and as you think about them and reflect upon them as you walk through life, you realize, you know, I really do have to make a choice. For example, verse 7 of chapter 1, which we already read. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. You have a choice today. You can be wise or foolish. And there's a way that you can be one, and there's a way that you can be another. And so when you try to understand the book of Proverbs, you recognize that they are truly proverbs, just statements. By that, we recognize they are concise statements which incisively contrast or compare truths that force the listener to make a choice on how he will live his life. The amazing thing, as you read the Proverbs of the Bible and compare them to the Proverbs of Egypt, the Proverbs of Babylon, the Proverbs of China, you would recognize that the Proverbs of the Bible all have moral decisions in them. They deal with righteousness and wickedness. They deal with evil and good. And so the Proverbs say, right living is righteous living. Correct living is holy living. You cannot be wise and wicked at the same time. That is impossible. There is no wise, wicked man in all the world. Not according to the book of Proverbs. Wise men are righteous men. Wicked men are foolish men, no matter how much they do know or think that they do know. Now here's a caution. When you read the book of Proverbs and you read these Proverbs, you must understand that they are just that, a proverb. They are a generalization. They don't have all the details. They're not designed to give you all the details. They don't have all the exceptions or all the nuances of how it could be understood. It's just a general statement of truth. So sometimes people get in trouble with the book of Proverbs because they try to make them precepts. Or they try to make them hold to every specific situation in life. They're just general statements. For example, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he shall not depart from it. That is not a promise. It is not saying if you train up your kid right, he'll turn out right. It's not a precept. Now, you're supposed to train up your kid right so that when he's old, he won't depart from it. It's not a precept. It's a proverb. It's a statement of fact. The way a child is trained is the way he will end up living. That's a general truth. Don't make it say any more than that. I bet you if I went to all of your homes, I would see characteristics in your lives that are the result of the training that you received when you were a child. These are proverbs, general statements of truth. And this one is this, the way you're trained is the way you live. So we understand the form of the proverbs just by the little word that's given. We also have to see, as we read verse 1, the father of proverbs. The proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. And you might think there's a whole bunch of Solomons, so he said, I'll make sure you know which one I'm talking about. He's the son of David, and if you don't get it yet, there might be some Solomons that are the sons of David. I'll say he's the king of Israel, and there's only one person who could possibly be that. And the reason he says that is because he wants you to know that when you read the Proverbs, you're not only reading short, concise statements of truth, you're reading short, concise statements of truth from a man by the name of Solomon, and all of a sudden you recognize, I probably should listen to this guy. What do you know about Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel? Well, if you go with me to 1 Kings in chapter 3, in 1 Kings chapter 3, and it says, Behold, I have done according to your words, and see, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any like you arise after you. You read the account there. You recognize when Solomon became king, God came to him and said, You can ask anything, and I'll give it to you. He could have asked for riches. He could have asked for military strength. He asked for wisdom, and God says, Because you asked for it, I will give it to you. And he says this, I will give you wisdom so that there's none before you, there's none after you have the wisdom that you have. What it teaches us is this, the wisdom we're about to read is the wisdom of Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, who received all of his wisdom from God. So when you read the book of Proverbs, you're not reading Confucius Say. You're not reading, as I have a book, somebody gave me this book, The Wisdom of the Midwest. Great little statements from all different people throughout the Midwest. What you are reading is concise statements by the wisest man who ever lived, writing under the inspiration of God. So that when you read 1 Kings chapter 4, it starts to list all the proverbs that he wrote, and all the poetry that he wrote, and all the trees that he understood, and all the facts of life that he understood. And it says, kings and people came from all over the world just to hear his wisdom. You have to understand the form of Proverbs. You have to understand the father of Proverbs. And when you understand that, you become a person who says, you know, I probably should listen to what he has to say. Can you imagine if Solomon came here today and you didn't have to listen to me? You listened to the wisest man who ever lived by the name of Solomon. That's what you have in your hands. Imagine walking through life and not taking the time to read the words of the wisest man who ever lived, writing under the inspiration of God. The form and the father help you and me to say, you know, Proverbs should be a very important part of my life. Well, it's not only the form and the father, but when you study these first 17 verses, you want to know what is the function of the Proverbs. And he lists it for us. And as you go through that, there are several things that come up. Notice verse 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6. And there's a little word, two, an infinitive phrases that want you to see why he wrote them and why you and I would study them, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning. A man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles, stack them all up. Imagine what you get when you read the book of Proverbs. You get wisdom, you get knowledge, you get understanding, you get discernment, discretion, equity, justice, judgment. You get all kinds of things, and he stacks up all of these words. Imagine if you could walk out into life and have knowledge. You just have facts. Understanding, you are able to take those facts and put them all together with discretion and discernment, and see how those facts relate to your world and how they relate to how you interact with people and they relate to how you interact with the world around you. So you have knowledge, you have understanding, the discretion. And one of the words in there is translated understanding, but it means discipline. That you would have the discipline of life to take the knowledge and the understanding, discernment that you have gained so that you have disciplined your life so that there's an order to it. And you do the right things. You see, sometimes I know the right things to do, or you might know the right things to do. Today I should not eat that, or I should do this, or I should not do that. And then I don't do it anyway, or I do what I'm not supposed to do. Discipline says I am able now to implement this knowledge and discretion and discernment into the very core of my life. So I start to do what I'm supposed to do. I start to relate to people the way I'm supposed to relate. I start to stay away from what I'm supposed to stay away from. I don't turn my eyes to things that I'm not supposed to be looking at. I don't say what I'm not supposed to say. And then ultimately, it gives you wisdom. Now, several things will help you in understanding wisdom. First of all, as you look at the book of Proverbs, you recognize that it's in a section of Scripture called poetry. There is the historical, the poetical, and the prophetical books of the Old Testament. History, of course, looks back, helps you understand where you've come from and why you are here today. Very, very important to study history. Very, very important to know why you are where you are today. What has gone into all the things that have made life what it is today. For example, our president who has to make decisions about Iraq, he has to study history. He has to see all the way back and fit all those things. Why are we here today? What has gone into the reasons why today we are standing on the threshold of war? History is important. Looking back is vital. Prophecy looks forward. You have to know where we're going to end up. That is very important. But poetry, the books of wisdom, are so vital to your life and to mine because they're between history and prophecy. They're between the past and the future. They're for the present. They deal with a tinge of history and prophecy. That's poetry. That's why Job and Psalms and Proverbs and Ecclesiastes are like reading the newspaper. They are the present issues of life. And so this is wisdom. It's to give you wisdom. It's to give you statements that will allow you to deal with everyday issues of life. It's as if what Solomon wrote could have been written today. It is just as true today as it was then. He's going to teach you all kinds of things as you go through it. So just the context of it helps you to understand a little bit of what you are going to gain from it. You're going to gain insight into the very issues of everyday life. There's another thing that you have to understand, and that is when you think about these Proverbs, they are designed to give you wisdom. And I think you all know that the word wisdom has a very distinct meaning. I'd like you to turn in your Bibles, if you would, to Exodus chapter 28 and verse 3 and 4. And then we'll go to Exodus chapter 36 and verses 1 and 2. They understand that we're in a period of time when the children of Israel have come out of Egypt and God has given them instruction. He's giving Moses instruction right now on how to build a tabernacle, how to make the garments for the priest. And when you study Exodus chapter 28, verses 3 and 4, it says this, "So you shall speak to all who are gifted artisans, whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom." There is the same word, the spirit of wisdom. "That they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, that he may minister to me as a priest. And these are the garments which they shall make: a breastplate, an ephod, a robe, a skillfully woven tunic, a turban, a sash, etc., etc." And if you read through the 28th chapter, he says, you know, there are certain people that I have gifted, God is speaking, I have given them the spirit of wisdom, so that they are able to take the flax and the wool and all the other materials, and they are able to dye them correctly so that all the colors are correct, and then they are able to make thread out of them. They are able to take all of those things and put it all together so that when it's all done, Aaron and the high priest and all the other priests will walk around with clothing that is made with skill. Notice chapter 36 of the book of Exodus. And in verses 1 and 2, it says this, "And Bezalel and Aholiab and every gifted artisan in whom the Lord had put wisdom to know how to do all manner of work for the service of the sanctuary shall do according to all that the Lord has commanded." And Moses called Bezalel and Aholiab and every gifted artisan in whom the heart of the Lord had put wisdom, everyone whose heart was stirred to come and do the work. Verse 4, "Then all the craftsmen who were doing all the work of the sanctuary came, each from the work he was doing." And you put that all together, and craftsmen and skill and wisdom all go together, and you recognize that the word wisdom simply means the ability to know something, to understand something, to discipline yourself in the realm of that something so that you are able to use what you know and to make a very skillful product. It may be a garment for the high priest. It may be a tabernacle where you have to take wood and gold and overlay it and have some skins that are made into curtains for this and certain posts and certain layouts and certain things. The ability to be a craftsman so that when it's all done, there's a beauty about it. And wisdom simply means that. Now, if you understand that the book of Proverbs is in the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, you understand that wisdom is skill, being a craftsman. You understand that each of the books of the wisdom literature teaches you skill for living in some area. Job teaches you how to live your life with skill when you are suffering. A lot of people suffer, they do not handle it well. And the book of Job will teach you when you're suffering, and none of you have suffered like Job has suffered, so don't ever say you got it worse than him. You read the book of Job and you get all the way through it, and you say, you know what? Now I know how to handle suffering with skill. To live my life with wisdom. Psalms, of course, is 150 different issues of life. And it teaches you how to sing. You can sing no matter what is happening in your life today. Imagine if you could walk through life and be a craftsman about life. To be skilled in living so that no matter what happens to you today, you can sing. Ecclesiastes, life doesn't make sense. He says, I'll teach you how to live your life with skill when it doesn't make a lick of sense. When it isn't fair, when there is not justice, when the wrong guys win, the right guys lose, I will teach you how to live your life with skill in the midst of the senselessness of life. Song of Songs, we call it the Song of Solomon, teaches us how to live our life with skill with our mate, with our spouse. First two chapters teach you how to date correctly. Second two chapters, how to have a correct wedding. Chapter 5 and 6, how to have a good fight. Chapter 7 and 8, how to just continue and grow in your love for your mate so that you would just live your married life with skill. Of all the books ever written about marriage, the Song of Songs is the greatest. And in the middle of it is Proverbs. And it's just a father talking to his son. Over 40 times, this is my son. A lot of people have said the first 9 chapters deal with a father speaking to his son, and that's somewhat true. However, if you get out your concordance today, you would recognize that the little phrase, my son, is not just found in the first 9 chapters, although it's found many times there. It is also found all the way through the book. It's a father who says, my son,
I've been around the block twice. I'm just going to try to give you some wisdom so that you don't have to learn from the school of hard knocks. Only this father is writing under the inspiration of God, and he's the wisest man who ever lived. And when you put that all together, you recognize that the function of Proverbs is to give us wisdom, skill for living. Can you imagine if you and I could learn to live life with skill so that there would be a beauty about it and it was well wrought? Some people's lives, really, when you put it all together, just boards nailed together. And some people's lives are well wrought. Everything fits. There's a beauty about it. And the function of the book of Proverbs is to help you and to me to gain a heart of wisdom so that we can live our life with skill. Well, understanding all of that, you kind of come up and say, you know, there's got to be some key to this all. There's got to be some foundation to all this. He says, well, we do have a foundation. He says in verse 7 these words, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." He says, you have to understand the foundation for Proverbs. You have to understand the foundation for skillful living. You see, you might have 1,000 different formulas for skillful living, and you can't remember them all. But you can remember one. It is this: fear God, fear God, fear God. It's the beginning of knowledge, chapter 1, verse 7. It's the beginning of wisdom, chapter 9 and verse 10. It is the fear of the Lord that causes you to turn from evil, Proverbs chapter 8, verse 33. David Jeremiah, years and years ago, did a series on the fear of the Lord and the benefits of the fear of the Lord. And if you take all the statements in your concordance, it is overwhelming what it will do. It saves you from trouble. It turns you from evil. Brings respect from the people around you. Here we find this: the foundation for wisdom, the foundation of all of the Proverbs is this: the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. When it says beginning, many have said that means beginning. It's the first step. You know that's true. That's what beginning means. The first step, before you do anything else, here's what you got to do. Fear God. Imagine if you walk through your life today, you're not afraid of God. By the way, the fear of the Lord, the word fear there means fear. And you can define it 1,000 different ways, but when you're all done, it still means fear. It means to be afraid of the Lord. Now, we say it can't mean that, because He wants to be my friend. Well, there are very few passages in Scripture that says God's your friend, first of all. But the reason we say it cannot mean fear like fear, and it has to mean reverential awe or something else, it's because in our little minds, we say it's impossible to be afraid of someone and to be a friend of someone. Just like we say it's impossible to rejoice and sorrow at the same time. Just go to a funeral and you know that you can rejoice and be sad at the same time. And you know what? You can be afraid of someone and be a friend of someone, glad to see them all at the same time. And if you don't believe that, just drive down the road and see a police officer. You're afraid of them. And what that means is, you know, you don't mess around with those guys because they have an authority you don't have. They can give you tickets. But you know, as I drive around in my world, I'm afraid of them. Therefore, I live correctly when I see them, at least. But I'm glad they're there. I appreciate police officers. I don't hate them. I don't despise them. I don't wish the world were free from all police officers. I am glad we have police officers, and I'm still afraid of them. And you know what it was like when you were a kid? You were afraid of your dad. But you loved your dad. And you knew that he loved you. You wanted to be with your father, unless, of course, you did something wrong. He says that's the way it has to be. It's a foundation for your wisdom. You have to walk through life, and God, you love him. You appreciate him. You want to be with him. Everything about him you're glad about, but you still are afraid of him. You don't mess around with him. And if he says jump, you say how far? And if he says set, you say when? It is the fear of the Lord that is the beginning. It's the first step, but it's more than just the first step. I got by that, now forget that. I'm beyond fear of the Lord. I don't do that anymore. I'm to a new level in my relationship. It means it's the foundation for wise living. It will permeate your life. Now, you might think this is the only place, or Proverbs is the only place, but you'd go with me, if you would, to a couple other passages. You could read Job 28:28. You could read Psalm 111:10. I'd like you to go to Ecclesiastes 12:13-14, because there the same author, Solomon, writes something about the fear of the Lord. He says this, verses 13-14, Ecclesiastes 12, "Fear God and keep His commandments. That's all God asks you to do. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." And you recognize that when it really comes down to it, you only have to fear God and keep His commandments. That's all life's about. You don't have to understand life to live it with skill. You don't have to understand why somebody gets the right promotion and somebody doesn't get the right. You don't have to understand anything about it. You don't have to have more money to understand life. All you need to do is fear God and keep His commandments. And that's the foundation. That is the foundation for wisdom. There's a lot of areas of life, when you think about it, where fear is the foundation. One of my friends back in Bergen, New York, he was an electrician. And I know some of you know how to work with electricity, too. And we were putting our church together, and there's this big box with all this electricity, the wires going in it. And he starts working in there. I was like, wow, I wouldn't put my hand in there if you paid me $1 million, because I'd be dead. I said, how do you do that? He says, I fear it, and I understand it. And I know where to put my hand and where not to put my hand, because if I put it in the wrong place, I'm dead. The fear of electricity is the beginning of handling that electricity correctly. It is the fear of the Lord that is the beginning of wisdom. Now you put that all together, you understand the form and the father and the function of the foundation, and you recognize we're ready to embark on the message of the book of Proverbs. However, if you've started to read the book of Proverbs, you recognize that I once tried to preach Proverbs verse by verse by verse by verse. And so the first week we preached Proverbs chapter 1, and we dealt with immorality and idolatry and this and that and the other thing. And so then we went to chapter 2, and guess what we dealt with? Immorality and idolatry and this and that and the other thing. We did all the same thing, only did it a second time. Then we went to chapter 3, and guess what we dealt with? Immorality and idolatry and raising kids and all the subjects. And so we went to chapter 4, and we had all the same things. And you just do them again and again and again and again. And I said, whoever wrote this book didn't know what he was doing. It doesn't flow like a Western mind thinks it should flow. It is really tough to preach Proverbs, verse 1 to verse last. You're going to repeat raising kids. You're going to repeat immorality. You're going to repeat stealing. You're going to repeat all these subjects again and again and again and again. But before you think that was a mistake, just recognize that if you just read through this one chapter a day, how that would be the exact way you would write it. Because every day you need another thought about immorality. Every day you need another thought about raising kids. Every day you need another thought about this and about that and the other thing. And on it goes. When you come to the flow of Proverbs, nobody has put together a good outline. But that's okay. You don't need a good outline. You recognize that it's not designed to be analyzed like us Western people like to analyze it. With point 1 and point 2 and point 3 and point 4 and subpoint A and subpoint B and subpoint C. It's just short statements all put together, and there's an order to it. Only I can't see it and you can't see it. We want to study the flow of it. And when you study the flow of it, you can't do it verse by verse. I have a lot of attempts up here of sheets of paper of people who have tried to put it all together, but it really doesn't. The way we will study it, however, is to deal with the subject by subject by subject. And so what I did is I took all the verses that deal with anger. I put them on a sheet of paper. And we're going to study anger. 2 weeks ago, we studied all the verses that deal with diligence. Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. So we just put all together the verses on diligence. We're going to put all together all the verses that deal with friendship. You know that Proverbs is one of the greatest books. The issue of friendship. How many of you have friends? Why do you need a friend? Maybe I can live without a friend. Proverbs talks about friendship. We'll put together all the verses that deal with riches, money. And we'll put together all the verses that deal with raising kids. And we'll put all those verses together and we'll try to understand it. Here's some of the items and some of those topics that we'll be dealing with. We've already dealt with designer ants, diligence. You can't shoot them. That's conflict. It was one of my dad's greatest statements. I'd come home and he says, Rich, you can't shoot them. You've got to learn to live with them. And the book of Proverbs says that again and again. You have to learn with people, learn to live with people you don't like. Pigs won't even eat it. That deals with money. What good's money? Pigs won't even eat it. You can't take it with you. Your heritage. We're going to deal with two heads are better than one. Counsel and advice and going it alone versus going it as a group. And you catch more flies with honey. How to be nice to people. And there are many other subjects. And I trust that as we go through that, we'll become a people. We'll appreciate all these areas of wisdom and put them into practice in our life. I'd like you to go back to Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 7. Because not only is the foundation, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, but I want you to see what the other side of it is. That fools defies wisdom and instruction. And he wants to leave you as two options. You can go home today and fear God and be wise. Or you can go home today and despise it. Say, I don't want anything to do with it. This is stupid. Don't want it. Don't need it. Doesn't make sense anyway. You can either be wise or you can be a fool. It's your choice. And I trust that as we study the book of Proverbs, we are a people who will recognize the tremendous wonder that God has given to us the secrets to skillful living. How we can be wise. How I can walk out into my world and be light years ahead of my neighbor's understanding of life. Not because I'm smart, because I just read the Bible and I just did what it said.